Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
When I say, can you dig it? Put your two hands up like that.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Can You Dig It, a podcast by the Silver Screen and Roll Network. I'm your host, as always, Jacob Rude. I promise you, we have a co-host. We're in the negotiation stage. Hopefully, it's a little more successful than the Lakers have had their trade negotiations all summer long. But next week, I should have my co-host, my new co-host, on board with us. We have a more than suitable stand-in, though, joining me today. Raj, man, we made it through the summer.
Yes.
We made it through free agency. How are you feeling now that a new season's about to start up?
I'm excited, which I don't think is the prevailing thought for most people. Media day tomorrow, as we're recording this, 8 days until our first preseason game. I'm counting that down. I think most people see that as a threat when I start counting those down on Twitter. But I'm doing well, man. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a weird vibe right now, and we're going to talk about that because this is I don't know. I kept expecting eventually there was going to be a Russell Westbrook trade, mm-hmm. and I wasn't really thinking about anything else. Except for that. So in some ways, this kind of snuck up on me that I wasn't ready for media day to start because in my mind, as long as Russell Westbrook was on this team, the season wasn't actually going to start with him being on the team. And that's what I want to talk about first, because if you rewind, and I've referenced this a lot, we don't have to fully dive into it. But if you rewind to exit interviews, mm-hmm. and the way Russ talked about the franchise, the coaching staff, even LeBron and AD, I would have bet a lot of money he was not going to play another game as a Laker. And that's still possible. There's 8 days until the preseason. There's a couple weeks, 3 weeks until the regular season, actual games. But how surprised are you that we're seemingly going to go into media day with Russell Westbrook on this team?
Yeah, I'm very surprised. I think we spoke on this podcast like right after Summer League, and we were pretty confident that he would be moved around that time. Obviously, the rumors were the largest that they've been. We obviously had the Kyrie stuff. But now you kind of have the suitors knocked down one by one, right? The Bogdanovich trade with Utah, the Indiana GM. Look, GMs go out and lie all the time. But, I mean, you know, the GM came out and said Miles Turner is going to be the starting center. Miles Turner goes and retweets some Indiana Pacer pages, and then tweets out the emojis of the color scheme of the Pacers to kind of show that he's on board with that too. But yeah, I'm extremely surprised. They're going to have to, you know, go into tomorrow and kind of try to tell us that whatever happened in the summer didn't matter. It was obvious that Russ was all in these negotiations. They were trying to trade him. They were trying to keep picks. But I'm interested how they sell it because obviously you talked about that exit interview. That's a tough listen. You even go back today, and sometimes I forget how crazy the stuff that he said, obviously the part that he wasn't able to be himself, the lack of accountability, all that stuff. And now they're just going into the season like, yeah, none of that actually happened, and they have to try to tell that this is the actual roster that they intended to build, which makes very little sense when you look at it. There's like six guards and two centers, very little wings that are playable. So I'm interested to see how they sell the roster tomorrow.
Yeah, because it felt like they were making roster additions with the expectation of trading Russ. And you trade for Pat Bev, you signed Dennis Schroeder. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, this is all going to make sense once Russ is finally dealt out. And then it hasn't happened. And I didn't actually think the Lakers would slow play this and take it into the season potentially and wait. And I didn't really think they could afford to do that. Whether they can or can't doesn't seem to be the point, because they're doing it. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, it is. It's wild just looking back throughout the summer of all the names that we felt like, oh, that's going to be a good, or that's going to be the deal. The Hornets were at the very beginning, talking about Gordon Hayward, and the Pacers were there. The Pacers have been there all along. Mm-hmm. The Nets with Kyrie, the Jazz with Bogdanovich, and the pieces around him. There was a, not necessarily a new team, a team that's kind of lurked in the shadows as well. The Spurs, who at one point were seen as the third team in a Kyrie mm-hmm. Irving trade. And they've kind of been in the background, not really active, but a team that has some potentially interesting pieces. Andy Larson of the Salt Lake Tribune, this was last week, reported that the Spurs are one of the teams that are still willing to take on Westbrook's contract, and they could send back a trade package of something involving Doug McDermott, Josh Richardson, mm-hmm. and Jakob Poeltl. And my reaction to this was, ooh, but I saw enough pushback on Twitter and just general reaction to this trade that it caught me by surprise. What would your thoughts be on swapping out Russ for what's definitely role players, but it seems like quite a step down in terms of role players?
Yeah, it's sad to think about that. I was going deep into Kyrie Irving film and, you know, watching a bunch of Kyrie Irving tape, and now you're telling me to go watch Jakob Poeltl and Doug McBurt. Yeah, they're like nice role players. I think, like, to me, Josh Richardson, like the idea of Josh Richardson is better than the actual player. Josh Richardson, I mean, the Dallas Mavericks, the Boston Celtics both moved him without really thinking about it. Obviously, the Mavericks, I think, got Seth Curry or something in the deal. But yeah, like, and Jakob Poeltl, I think he's a nice center. We already have two centers on the roster that aren't named Anthony Davis. I mean, just from the fit perspective, Doug McDermott is actually signed for the following season for around $13 million. So, I mean, like, I think the Lakers aren't going to take on money for that season, although I disagree with the free agency plan. But just from their perspective, I don't think they're going to take on money for a player that's not a star. Doug McDermott is a nice role player. It doesn't excite me, Jacob, honestly. Like, I get it to move on from Russell Westbrook, but I feel like we think we're in desperate times. I don't think the Lakers feel like we're in desperate times. So I don't see that happening, especially if there's any pick compensation. I just don't see it. And it doesn't excite me enough. I mean, does Doug McDermott, Jakob Poeltl really change your team makeup that much? And Josh Richardson as well would be a nice wing to add. But yeah, it doesn't really excite me. I would get it from just a straight salary perspective, but yeah, I don't see them taking on money, right? I don't think they're going to take on money for the following season for Doug McDermott. We had those conversations about Mike Conley as well, who has $13 million guaranteed, very similar kind of situation. I don't see it. And he's going to be 32 next year. I don't really see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers don't seem too interested in taking back long-term money. That was, I don't know necessarily that there's been anything come out since LeBron signed his extension. Mm-hmm. I don't really know why they wouldn't. They don't have enough room for a max salary, even if if they don't have any more money on the books other than what they have now. I don't believe it's enough for a 30% max. So I don't know why they wouldn't want to take back long-term money, but the other two, Richardson and Poeltl, aren't expiring, but Doug McDermott is through next season. I don't love any of this personally. And Poeltl is a good defensive center who cannot shoot free throws to save his life. And as you said, we have two centers already. So I feel like if you're trading for a center, there should be something. It should be a clear step up over who they already have. And I don't know that he necessarily is. Mm-hmm. He can do something different than what the other two can, but it doesn't really help having three different centers on the roster. I'm with you with Josh Richardson as well. Just kind of the idea of him is great, but he's been shipped off place to place for a reason. Mm-hmm. And then Doug McDermott, he can shoot. I don't even know that you can play him in big games or certainly not playoff games. And that is a big contract on the books for next season. So I was pretty far out on this deal. I think there's probably a reason. There's been zero momentum when it comes to any kind of trade with the Spurs, because none of these are all that appealing. Josh Richardson is someone the Lakers kind of flirted with the idea of trading for at the trade deadline last season, but that's it. And I think the Lakers were only offering a couple second round picks in that. So it'd be a far cry to go from that to shipping Russ and potentially first round picks with that as well. So yeah, the end result is that we head in today with Russ on the roster. For how long? Who knows? Yeah. He may. It feels like a situation where at any point he could be traded. If the right situation arises, if the two sides, the Lakers and Pacers, that's going to loom until Russ is dealt that trade.
Yeah.
And until the two sides potentially agree upon something, this is just going to loom. How much do you think this is going to impact the team, just kind of having this situation kind of looming over it?
Yeah, I mean, it's what's going to dominate media day, right? And that's kind of the reason we all thought that Russ would be moved, because they don't want to deal with that. And I guess they're going to go into the, you know, flames, you know, head on. I guess I would, you know, I would still do the Indiana deal if it was available, but they're going to go in and try to sell this Russell Westbrook experiment. And Jacob, I guess the gamble to me, I guess, let me ask you this. Are they in a better position? Let's say they start out and they look competitive with Russ. Does that help any of the negotiations with any of the other teams? I'm thinking that's a gamble they are taking, and I think it's a huge risk, honestly, because if they look terrible, and then I've seen the send Russ home, stuff like that, they could do that. But then I think it looks even worse, right? Because then obviously you're in extreme desperation. Russ is expiring at the end of the year. You get nothing for the Russ trade that you made a season ago. So is that like a gamble you think they're taking? Are they in a better position if that happens? Because I think that's their mindset with this. And I would have loved if they would have just went and did one of these deals. But they obviously think that they can be at least competitive enough to, I guess, walk back to negotiations later during the season. And you better hope that like Indiana doesn't start, you know, well, or like any of these teams that you're hoping to trade with. Because obviously those teams aren't going to want to mess with what they're going. So, yeah, it's a huge risk to me, but I think that's the gamble that they're, you know, rolling the dice on.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, that whether or not I think it's a smart move, we're past that. We're here. That seems to be the move they're making. It is a huge gamble, because if they do come out, they start well. I mean, we haven't even touched on what role Russ is going to play. We'll have a week to talk on that. But yeah. If they start well, then yeah, the pressure is lifted from the Lakers, that the need to ship off Russ right away isn't there as much. And maybe that helps them in negotiations, whereas the inverse is true. If they come out and they start 2-5 or 2-6 or something, and they're really struggling and Russ isn't playing well, that pressure's intensified to all-time levels. And so, yeah, this is a huge gamble the Lakers are making. But it's a gamble that they knew they were going to make if they got to this point. And to them, it was better making this gamble than including a couple first-round picks in some of these trades, which I don't know that I agree with, but I'm not running the Lakers, so it doesn't necessarily matter there. It's what Rob Pelinka felt, and Rob Pelinka felt that this was the right move to make. We'll see, but I mean, when we were talking about this show, and we've kind of alluded to it as well, Rob Pelinka is going to have some explaining to do based on everything that's been out, all the rumors. He's already a fascinating person to listen during his press conferences. What are you expecting? How many scriptures or prophecies or proverbs, I mean, are you going to expect from him today?
Yeah, well, really quickly, you said they can't start like 2-5 or something like that, right? I think you said they can't start slow. I was talking about this with Sabrina. Have you looked at our opening schedule yet?
It's not great.
So it's Warriors, Clippers, Blazers, Nuggets, Wolves, Nuggets. Like, that's an extreme start. So they have there's no like ramp up, you know, it's straight into the fire. So I think it's going to be tough to have a really good start. But yeah, Pelinka's going to have to sell this roster. That's his job as a GM, to sell the vision. And I thought, you know, I was really looking forward to him speaking. I think last Wednesday was it when it was planned. And they obviously moved that forward. Him and Darvin Ham were scheduled to speak, and then decided to just speak on media day. But yeah, I'm extremely interested in. I don't think I or most people want to hear that they're not done yet. Like, preseason starts in a week from tomorrow. So like, there's no, I'm not done yet. This is the roster that you've chosen to walk, you know, to walk in with. Most like moves that happen at the trade deadline or the buyout market aren't, you know, team altering moves for the most part. So this is kind of the makeup of your team. I guess they have a week to still make moves and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm really interested in how he sells this roster along with Darvin Ham, who I think I've heard from enough. I think I've heard him sell Russell Westbrook, which I was hoping would just be kind of in theory, but it's actually going to play out in real games. But yeah, because Rob Pelinka, I think, spoke a couple months ago and said they weren't finished. He looked at the roster and understood that like he can't sell this roster to the fans at that time. And the only thing that's really changed has been Patrick Beverley for Talen Horton-Tucker, which I don't think is enough. So yeah, I'm really interested in the quotes and book quotes that he gives out tomorrow.
Yeah, he's going to have to pull some wild proverbs out for this one because, yeah, as you said, he kind of said it himself or alluded to it himself that this team was not done. And that's how I've been kind of approaching looking at this team, that it wasn't finished. It wasn't finished. And here we are. And I still don't think it's finished, but we don't have a choice. Like, we're here. Again, they could potentially make a trade before they actually play even a preseason game, but the fact we got to this point isn't great. I always kind of set in my head a deadline of media day as when they need to have a Russ deal done, because I mean, again, I know this is back to a point I made, but I just could not envision Russ coming back into the facility for preseason or anything like that. And I was wrong. I guess time heals some wounds, and they were able to mend fences enough from how the season ended to get back to this point. But it is wild that it still feels like we have a wholly incomplete team as we head into training camp in the preseason, because as you said, that's not how things typically work. You don't typically make big trades in season to finish making your team. Not to the level that the Lakers are looking to do it, at least. You can tinker with some role players and picks and whatnot, but what the Lakers are doing are taking one of the biggest contracts on the roster and trying to flip them for multiple viable role players, and that's not normal. So it just has the Lakers in such a awkward position right now, because as you said, this is going to be what everyone's going to be talking about tomorrow. You can't dodge the questions. Everybody's going to try, but you can't dodge these questions. You're going to have to meet them head on. And no matter how head on they even meet them tomorrow, it's not going to make the story go away. Everybody can answer them as truthfully and honestly as they can tomorrow. And yet, still going to be the prevailing story. The just because they answer the questions doesn't mean everybody's done talking about it, because between now and either the February trade deadline or whenever he's dealt, that's going to be every bad loss is going to be, well, does this move the Lakers closer to trading Russ? And every good win's going to be like, ah, well, see, they didn't need to trade Russ. They were fine. And that's just what's going to be the reaction for the opening however long of the season until he's dealt. So right. It's an awkward position for everyone. And again, it's Rob Pelinka that's going to have to explain what the Lakers' thinking has been and why they haven't moved him, because there's a lot of Lakers fans who aren't going to who are going to want to hear why Russ is still on their team and why they didn't want to include multiple first round picks to ship him off to Indiana or Utah or wherever it may be. He's going to have some explaining to do. Darvin Ham is kind of mixed in with all this.
Yeah.
I want to talk about him and his first media day, and boy, he's thrown into the fire on this one here in just a moment. So kind of lost in all this is, in a normal scenario,
yeah,
with a normal team and a normal franchise, we'd be really excited to hear about Darvin Ham during his first media day. We are 20 minutes into this podcast before really even mentioning Darvin Ham. You mentioned him once, yeah, but as you said, everything he said during his introduction, during his media tour over the summer about Russ felt like nice words to say to try to convince other teams that the Lakers were really serious about doing this. And that's kind of how I took it. Like, oh, well, that's nice, but it's not really going to happen. It's really happening. So knowing what we've heard Darvin Ham say and knowing what we'll probably hear him repeat, because he's been on a media tour all summer. Yeah. I don't imagine he has too many new quotes. How convinced are you that Russ can actually play the role that that Darvin Ham wants him to play?
Yeah, it's interesting. So you said your kind of deadline was media day. My deadline was kind of LeBron's mini camp. And I think that kind of goes into right what we're about to get into. And especially with a first-time head coach, you want his like team to be kind of the team. You know, during training camp, coaches, like especially when they're signed late, they always say, oh, we didn't have a full training camp, right? That's an excuse that you are a reason you kind of hear a lot of coaches give. So a Russ trade would be a huge kind of makeup of this team. Like, it would change the makeup of the team. So I was hoping he would get his real team around this time. But Darvin Ham has preached, you know, these 1-4 principles. He's preached accountability with Russ on the defensive end. I think these are all things that we need to see to believe them. I mean, there's no real large track record of, you know, Russ, you know, being locked in on defense for a large amount of time. And you know, the we have a lot of guards, and that's a bad thing. But I guess the one good thing is that Darvin Ham can hold him accountable, right? There are places where if he's not defending, he can play a Dennis Schroeder, a Patrick Beverley, a Lonnie Walker, and Austin Reeves, all these guards that he can kind of fill in for. And I'm going to take Darvin Ham at his word. You know, he said that he's going to hold Russ accountable on that end, and I'm going to hold him to that. We'll see how that comes. And again, the 1-4 principles, that's all great. Said he wants to, you know, have Russ have transition principles that, you know, kind of can help the team. Got to defend for all those things to work. And I'm interested to see it. I'm not optimistic about it. I'm kind of hoping that, you know, LeBron and AD are good enough to kind of carry a team that's going to be, especially aside from those two, really on the other side of the talent level of most of the teams they play, especially on the higher end of the Western Conference, which is kind of our beginning schedule. So, yeah, I hope that, you know, if Russ can work, that'd be great. I think it gives them more room and more options. But that's, like we talked earlier, it's a huge gamble. And Darvin Ham has kind of played the company line. He said, you know, Russ is going to play. He's going to get his chance. He's obviously going to start. I've seen some Russ may come off the bench. I don't see that happening. I think Darvin Ham has said way too much to go on and then take Russ off the bench. So, but I'm interested. I want to see it. I think most people aren't really excited to see it, but I want to see it. We got 21 games last year of it, and hopefully we, you know, get a better kind of outcome from it this season.
Yeah, it's similar to how we were talking about Josh Richardson, the idea of what Darvin Ham wants is great. I don't believe that Russ is going to buy into it because this is year whatever for him. And he's had coaches all along tell him you need to focus more on defense and learning to play off the ball.
Be a screener.
Whether it was with Durant, whether it was with Harden, whatever it was, whether it's with LeBron now, that's been the recurring message, and it's never gotten through. There was like a brief moment in Houston for like 3 months before the pandemic where he did it, and then he came back in the bubble and didn't really do it. And so, like, I don't have a lot of faith in that. I'd love for it to work because a lot of the ideas that Darvin Ham has, especially about Russ, make sense. I guess one of the good things that I didn't think a lot about, you mentioned, with the 7 billion guards the Lakers have, in theory, you can just bench Russ if he's not doing what you want him to do.
Right.
That is going to take a lot of cojones to say from Darvin Ham coming in right away and benching your potential starting point guard if you don't think he's following the game plan. But I don't know, maybe having someone that seems to be able to relate to players more than Frank Vogel certainly could will help try to get Russ to change how he plays. There's been things sprinkled throughout the offseason that are encouraging. They've talked about wanting to put Russ in the corner more, and his corner three-point percentage was actually really good last season and has been really good the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, just doesn't take them.
And so, I mean, there are ways where you can put him into positions to succeed. It's just whether he's willing to do that, and I don't know that he is, and this is just a mess of a situation for, like you said, Darvin Ham coming in, first-year coach. Ideally, you have the team you have in front of you heading into training camp. I would be stunned if this is the team he finishes the season with, and if it is, they're not finishing the season in the play-in or playoff, I don't think. It would take a Herculean effort from LeBron and AD to get to that point. Mm-hmm. So this is a tough spot for Darvin Ham. And so in a lot of ways, I'm interested to see what his thoughts are on Media Day today. And I don't suspect he's going to change much from what he said over the summer, but it's just a really interesting spot you put your first-year head coach in, where you just kind of have this player, this deal looming that's going to drastically alter the makeup of your team. But it's going to happen just at some point during the season. We don't really know when. It's just kind of a brutal spot to put a first-year head coach in. But when have the Lakers ever been accommodating to their head coach? They certainly haven't been that for the last 3 years, however long Frank Vogel was there. So, I don't know.
Well, Ham does have a 4-year deal, right? So I think that's a huge deal. So if you remember last Media Day, they really sold this as like a big three, right? Like that was kind of the sell. Mm-hmm. Pelinka sold it as that, right? And he was like, yeah, we have a star. We brought a star to Los Angeles to add to the other two stars. That's how it was sold. I think how they sell it tomorrow is extremely important because it goes back to the benching Russ. And I think if Russ is not sold tomorrow as part of the big three, which I don't think he will be, again, Darvin Ham having the 4-year deal, and I think, you know, Ham is a guy I believe is going to coach his way. I think he's going to do things the way that he wants to, right? It's been a long time for him, his first time being a head coach, and I think he has the kind of authority to kind of do that. So to me, I think tomorrow how they sell it is extremely important. How they, you know, speak about Russ and say, like, it's going to be different to me than last year, right? Last year was sold as these three stars coming together to win. I don't think it'll be sold as that tomorrow. And I think that goes back to, like, your point of being able to, you know, have other guards come in. Can he bench him? Can he keep him accountable for doing things? Like, I don't think Russ is going to become Draymond Green. Like, that's not happening. He's not going to become some guy who just does a bunch of dribble handoffs and go set screens all over the floor. Like, it's just not in his game. There's like a fine line you got to walk, right? Because if you have Russ off the ball so much, And he's just not effective at all. Like, there's like, he's becomes just an ineffective player. There's like a fine line, like how many ball screens do you give him? How many, you know, possessions do you give him where he has the ball and he can attack in space? And doing that with LeBron on the floor, how do you stagger them? So that's all Darvin Ham's problems that we were hoping he wouldn't have to deal with. But he's kind of said the same things all summer on his, like you said, media tour. And now he's going to have to put those into reality.
Yeah, it is an interesting point. Him having a four-year deal will empower him in some ways, because the Lakers aren't going to fire him right away, basically, to put it bluntly. So that'll make it more interesting and maybe more plausible that he may bench Russ, but it's such a weird situation. I mean, to your point about how they sell this, if you look back to last season, and the biggest takeaway from Media Day last season was how AD was going to be the center. How he was down to play center, and how he said it, and almost immediately it felt like everybody walked it back. It felt like he said something and then realized, oh, crap, I wasn't supposed to say that, because it was – him saying, yeah, I bulked up, I'm ready to play more center. And then it was him and Frank Vogel walking all of that back about whether he was going to play center or not. But still, the biggest takeaway coming out of Media Day was AD is going to play center, and that didn't happen. So to a certain extent, even whatever they say at Media Day today, how much are you going to be able to believe that, considering what we've seen in Media Days past?
Yeah, it's tough. So, again, last year, and I don't know if we can believe them or not, but if you remember the starting lineup that kind of came out, right, that was kind of being sprinkled out, I believe, by Shams and Jovan and others, it was Russ, I believe it was Wayne Ellington, LeBron, Trevor Ariza, and AD. So Trevor Ariza was supposedly the link piece, right? He was the mythological, perfect power forward to put next to Anthony Davis. And that was supposedly the reason why, you know, DeAndre Jordan ended up starting 20 games. And then Dwight Howard started after him. And obviously we got very little of AD at the five because he missed 42 games. And the games he played, a lot of them didn't coincide with LeBron anyway. So anyway, but yeah, so I'm interested, you know, how they sell tomorrow. I think AD's probably not going to get as many center questions, considering we have two others on the roster, but yeah, it's their job to kind of sell this team, and I want to hear how they believe it to go. I mean, the stuff that's been coming out, I mean, the Austin Reeves at small forward, like stuff like that, it just, you know, really concerns me of how they're looking at this roster. And to me, there's just no way they went into this offseason and signed a bunch of 6'1" guards and hope they play up a position like that. There's no way that's the story. So I need to hear how they feel like this is going to go. Again, JTA is like one of the wings that's going to have to be important on this team. Like, he's one of the taller wings that are on the team, and he's like 6'6". So like, I'm fascinated like where they go with this. Cole Swire might need to play because he's actually tall and can shoot. Like, so like, I'm very interested how they sell this to the fan base tomorrow, and we'll get to see it.
What is your mythological starting five the day before Media Day starts? What is your starting five if you could pick right now?
So I would go Russ, Patrick Beverly, LeBron, AD, and Thomas Bryant if he's healthy. Like, that would be my starting five. Still a small backcourt. It's going to be a lot of pressure on Patrick Beverly to – like I said, we open with the Warriors to start on Steph. Then we go to the Clippers, Paul George, Kawhi, send help. And then, but yeah, that would be my current starting five. I think Patrick Beverly is like if you're going to build a player like that you would want next to stars, I think he's the type. You would wish he was a little taller, but I mean, you won't get Patrick Beverly. If he was like 6'7", he wouldn't be on your team. So, but yeah, that would be my current starting five. And hopefully your bench kind of contributes enough to keep us afloat until they eventually decide to go in with an all-in move, right? They obviously didn't feel like this team was one all-in move away, which I think is the wrong path when LeBron turns 38 or 39 next year. I think that's like the really going into year 21, Jacob. Say that out loud. LeBron's going to year 21 next season. Like,
he's unbelievable. Yeah. And that somehow that has been buried. We haven't even really talked about LeBron heading into to this season, which is a shame. We'll have plenty of time to do that. I don't know that they can start Russ, man. I don't know that they will. I don't think they should. Like, ideally, my starting five would be the four you mentioned, but probably swap out Russ for maybe Austin Reeves.
Okay.
And maybe have LeBron play more as like a point guard, similar to what he did in the title season. But I don't know. It's just there's other ways you could do it. You could potentially start Dennis Schroeder, I like that. Which is wild considering he wasn't on a team 2 weeks ago. And maybe Kendrick Nunn if you want some more shooting. There are some things you can do there. There's just it's a bit of a mess right now. Is this to kind of finish this up? Mm-hmm. This is a point you started to make before we recorded, and I told you to stop because I wanted to talk about it on the show. Is this the least excited you think the fan base has been for a season in like recent memory, at least?
Very much so. Very much so. I was telling you before, like, I've been counting down and people just, you know, get upset at it. Or even if you mention the Lakers at all in terms of trying to win or any of those kind of those words, people get really upset. Even like the terrible years, you know, we had like the summer league momentum where there were young guys you wanted to see play, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, guys like that, that people were at least excited. This is a team that still employs LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And still, the Russell Westbrook factor has just really killed a lot of, not just optimism, just like any kind of excitement to even enjoy basketball. It's very, I understand it. I totally get it. I think when people see the product on the floor, they'll come back and buy in again. If they're competitive, obviously. Last year, I think, was such a stain. People who watched every game, I think a lot of people stopped at some point, but I think the people that watched every game, it was a stain to watch. It wasn't fun. It wasn't enjoyable. There's a lot of bad basketball. A lot of it, Russ played 80 games last year, so he was kind of in the thick of every single one of that. But I think that's kind of what has people down. They were told all summer that they were in these negotiations, they were in these trades, in these deals. They're expecting players to come back, role players, stars, what have you. And to just really do nothing other than, you know, move Taylor Horton Tucker for Patrick Beverley and then just sign a whole other bunch of guards. So that I think that's just really killed the excitement this season. I'm hoping, you know, a few wins here and there. And I keep saying we're not going to have to take long to learn about this team. Like, this start is extremely, extremely rough, which is why I think preseason is important. I would like some kind of tone set the first day, like a seriousness set on the first day. I was at last year's first preseason game, Jacob. The vibe in that was, first of all, we got blown out, I believe, by a Nets team that sat KD, Harden, and who was the other guy? Kyrie, who sat all three of those guys, and I believe the Nets still kind of blew us out. Kendrick Nunn did play in that game, which is a strange kind of strange.
You've seen Haley's comment.
Haley, the singer, right?
Yeah. We'll go ahead.
What's it called? Yeah, so I'm hoping for a better tone set in the first preseason game. And hopefully, you know, they start a week from tomorrow. But, well, it's going to be interesting. I hope the excitement comes back at some point. It's just I understand why fans, I guess, feel that way right now.
I started to laugh whenever you even referenced last preseason because of just how unserious the Lakers were during it. I'm looking back at that game you mentioned. The Lakers lost by 26 points to that Nets team that did not play anybody. AD was the only Lakers starter actual big three, I guess, that played. The vibes from last year's preseason were awful. And the Lakers just kept saying, it's fine. We're going to figure it out. It's fine. These games don't matter. It's fine. Do not take that approach this season. It doesn't even have to result in wins. There was just at no point during the preseason last year where it felt fine.
No.
And it very much was an omen for how the season was going to go. I don't necessarily care about the result. I care about the process, and the process was awful last season. I understand LeBron, AD aren't going to want to play a ton in the preseason, but I think it probably has to be more than last year, and I think just have better vibes. Like, I know that's an impossible thing to measure, but like, it just felt so bad last year watching that team play, and there was just kind of this looming feeling of like, oh man, is this team actually really bad? Yeah, they were. The team was actually really bad. We just didn't fully realize it at the time. Gosh, just have a better preseason. This is not a great start to having a better preseason than last year as we head into. I was trying to look it up. The last time I might have been this like not excited about a preseason, maybe the 2013-14 Lakers, where we knew Kobe wasn't going to be playing to start because he was coming off that torn Achilles.
Yeah.
Dwight had just left, and you had just kind of this mix and match of Laker role players with Mike D'Antoni. They went 27-55 this year. Probably not a great team to compare yourself to when you have LeBron and AD and title aspirations. And so this team just has such a weird, honestly weird vibes to it, which again is the opposite of what you want coming off last season. It's just such a weird start to the season, unofficially, I guess. Tomorrow, is there anything else you're looking forward to on Media Day?
I think, you know, mostly I want to hear the GM speak. I want to hear, you know, AD and LeBron kind of sell how they feel and how they felt the team looked at mini camp and all that, at LeBron's mini camp and stuff like that. I mean, Media Day is supposed to be, you know, a fun, you know, day. It's supposed to be the day where, like, every fan base believes, you know, their team has a chance to do something, at least maybe if it's not win a title, make the playoffs. You know, every team kind of preaches the same thing. They want to play faster, right? Like, that's stuff that you kind of hear. And we're going to go into it kind of with where we're just kind of questioning the GM on his decisions. Like, you should kind of know the roster by now. It's kind of disappointing that's how we're not going to go into it when Media Day is supposed to be hyping the team up for its, you know, preseason games. And like, you know, you said LeBron and AD have to play at least play the first halves, right? Like, if you remember the first year when AD first arrived, LeBron and AD both played, I believe it was in Golden State.
This is a warning.
They destroyed the Warriors. Obviously a different Warriors team, but still, you know, Steph still played that night. Draymond, I believe, played that night. I would like a little bit better of a tone set. And I think that tone obviously starts tomorrow, but I think it starts a week from tomorrow. It starts when the games actually start. And I think this preseason, I keep preaching, is important. We don't have a ramp up time. Like, this beginning of the season is rough. You don't get to start in like Charlotte and go to like Washington. It's like, boom, Minnesota, the Clippers, Warriors, all teams that have extremely high aspirations and who've kind of been waiting for this season. The Clippers get Kawhi back. The Nuggets get Jamal Murray back. We get those two teams three times. Like, it's a really rough schedule. So hopefully, you know, Darvin Ham can kind of figure this roster out that he's got.
You mentioned a phrase there. Who is your odds on pick to say that they're in the best shape of their life tomorrow?
Ooh, that's interesting. Best shape of their life. Patrick Beverley. I think he would say something like that. I think I've already heard him say something like, someone asked him.
He probably always thinks he's in the best shape of his life.
I think someone asked him his age or something. He said, I feel better than I did at 18 or something like that. So I'm expecting larger than life quotes from Patrick Beverley tomorrow. Patrick Beverley and Russ, by the way, tomorrow, both on the same team. What a world we're living in.
I beg that they get a picture of just them two in front of the plain white background. It feels like Austin Reeves is a bit of cheating because I think there's been stories about him bulking, losing weight during the offseason and getting into good shape. I'll throw maybe Lonnie Walker out there. We haven't heard a ton about him. Maybe he comes in and says, I'm in the best shape of my life, and everybody starts to buy into him being a big role player this season. There's a lot of stuff we probably didn't even talk about that, as you said, we never even touched on. Russ and Pat Bev are going to be on the same team, which I was telling people there's no shot that's happening. And again, I was very wrong. So we will see how that pans out and how those two get along. I'm sure they'll be asked about that as well during media day. So it's just going to be a weird, fascinating, bizarre media day today, tomorrow, depending on when you're listening to this, Monday. We will have a recap for you on the podcast feed tomorrow. I appreciate all you guys sticking with us through the summer. We are through it. We are done with it. We are into the preseason. We have actual basketball Lakers content to talk about. And we are 7 days away, probably as you're listening to this, from a real Lakers basketball game. So we're almost there. Appreciate you guys sticking with us. Raj, thanks a ton for coming on. I will be back next week. I promise. Maybe not promise. I'm almost certain I will have a co-host next week to introduce to you guys as we get this all underway. But in the meantime, be sure you subscribe to the podcast feed to hear everything from preseason in the coming week. And we'll be back with you next week.